The KM Community Podcast, bringing you stories from Kent's communities every week.
Hello and welcome to the first episode of the KM Community Podcast. I'm your host Oliver Kemp, and over the coming months myself and my colleague Eliza Shah will be bringing you the important stories and issues from communities all over the county. If you have a story you think needs to be told, just use the hashtag KM Community on Facebook, Instagram or Twitter, or you can email me at okemp@thekmgroup.co.uk. This week, leaving the armed forces and starting life as a civilian can be a difficult process, both mentally and physically. Many members of the military find themselves having to enter into the welfare system, a process that can be complex and confusing, according to a report released by the Forces in Mind Trust last week. The report highlighted some shocking examples of the welfare system failing veterans in need. One veteran, who remains anonymous, found himself relying on food banks, skips, and bins to survive, all because of the harsh sanctions of the Universal Credit System. Professor Lisa Scullion at the University of Salford led this report and says there is a real concern in the way veterans are being assessed to be fit for work.
So there was very serious concerns within our research that a number of veterans had been incorrectly assessed as being fit for work through the assessment process. And there was concerns that the people making those assessments weren't suitably qualified to assess impairments that related to service, particularly mental health. So they didn't really understand those, and people were being found fit for work when they very clearly weren't fit for work.
So what measures are in place here in Kent to support our veterans in financial need? To discuss this, I sat down with Kate Parkin, the director for the Kent and Medway Armed Forces NHS Network.
The KM Community Podcast.
Kate, thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
I'm sure some of the information and conclusions reached by the Forces in Mind report were shocking to many people. This very much lies in your expertise and your everyday work. So were you surprised by some of the conclusions that they came to?
Actually, no. We have had to pick up a number of cases that have had problems with getting the assessments and the amount of money that they should be getting in recognition of what is actually wrong with them.
So those responses that were coming from that report are what you would expect in your everyday.
Yeah.
It's a sad state of affairs, really, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, Universal Credit's been attacked a lot over the past few years. There's been identification issues that have blocked people from receiving payments. There've been 5-week waits that have pushed people into food banks. And the whole system, which is obviously an online system now, it seems quite confusing and complicated. In your experience working with veterans of Kent, how often are they faced with a kind of frustrating and difficult process of managing their finances?
I think it is improving as everyone gets to know the system. But with all online not everyone has access to online, and that's the first starting point, is actually some of them need support even to go online and get it. And then it's to try and understand and prove what they should be entitled to, particularly if they aren't well with mental health or physical health issues or in difficult positions.
Do you find that ends up being a fairly common issue? Because I suppose sometimes we take for granted the fact that we're online and we just don't even think about it, do we? But are there a significant number of people out there, especially veterans, that are coming out of the forces and struggling with that kind of online process?
Particularly those who have been out maybe for a little while or feeling that they can't connect with the world at the moment through electronic means, they can have difficulty, and they're definitely the older part of the generations who maybe didn't have computers in those days but still don't fall into pensions, but even they have problems because some of that's gone online as well now.
Yes. I suppose it's a lot of it's a cost-cutting thing, a budget-saving thing. It's supposed to be there to streamline the system, isn't it? Do you find that is there, on the whole, more issues now it's online than when there was a person to speak to? Or do you think that system in general was just so complicated anyway?
I think it's always been quite complicated and difficult. And that's the part of the problem, is people not knowing where they can go to get support to actually help them solve some of those problems and help them through it when they are faced with it. I know I help even just personally a number of people, just because actually it is quite complex. Unless you're used to form filling, it is difficult.
And I think it's important for people to understand how complicated the support system networks for armed forces veterans actually are. So even if you start to research it like I have done, there are so many different charities out there. There's the Armed Forces Champions that were put out by the Department of Work and Pensions. There's so many different areas. I mean, can you break down for us so we can actually try and understand how this system works in general?
Yes, as you say, it is really complex, and there's meant to be about 2,500 charities. All of the sections, there are now areas that we're all working together and bringing that together. There's COBSIO, which is a really good place to go for if you're wanting to check a military charity and make sure they're genuine. And what you've named as service champions that are in DWP are now part of actually the Armed Forces Network, which I run on behalf of the whole of Kent and Medway, which is a source of bringing everyone together, whether it's the charities, it's the public sector, work and pensions, police. We work together now to try and help that and have one central point for contact for people.
Because that's what's important, isn't it? It's making sure people understand where they need to go.
And also, if they are contacting somebody, that those people know where to go as well, so that they can bring in the support that's required, because there is actually quite a lot of support. There's people that can help them fill in forms, do that online for them, or also translate some of things where people may not be getting the message across that they can't do something because they don't know how to fill the form in.
Mm. That sounds like that's quite a workload. Do you have enough people on your staff to deal with the whole county's worth of work there?
Basically, there's three people, and we cover the whole of Sussex, Kent and Medway.
Wow.
So it is very busy, but what we've tried to do is actually train others to be able to do that and work as part of a system. So we've now got 1,000 service champions, and they're in all organisations across that area. And we work with the charities, and we're trying to make central resources. So if someone gets stuck, they know where to go, they can look at it. We have information online, which we can share, which is Kent and Medway Armed Forces Network, and that has all the pathways to where you can get access, help, and how to contact people. And in addition to that, we also have something called the Forces Connect app, and that is a single point for Kent and Medway, which is really good that they can, within four clicks, get what they need. But if you just phone us up, we can also help on that one, and we can make sure that number is also shared. And that just means that people don't have to be able to go online to get support. If the worst comes to worse and people really don't know, there's the Veteran Gateway, which is a single point of access, but that's very nationally driven and not local for Kent and Medway, and they won't know all the local Kent and Medway services, which we've now got within our system.
So it sounds like that's quite a big undertaking, getting the app out there and designing that. So that's just available for Kent and Medway, is it?
It's available for the South East.
Okay.
So it will be Kent and Medway, Sussex, Hampshire, Surrey, and doing London over the summer.
So the plan is to really push that out to more areas that are in need.
Yeah.
It sounds like in terms of trying to understand the support networks available to veterans, what we have here in Kent is actually quite a robust system in some ways.
Yes, and it's very well linked now into all the reserve centres, the regular units as well, and their families, so that we can support pay people in those situations. And that then helps us get out to the veterans. So my plea now is veterans, family members, even if you've served one day, you are classed as someone who has served in the armed forces. You might not see yourself as a veteran, but actually there is help out there, and we can help you and get you to the right people.
Yeah, and I think some of that, and I understand this was something that Professor Scallion highlighted in this Forces and Mind Trust report, there is a stigma in getting help, isn't there?
Yes.
And that seems like that's one of the greatest hurdles in what you guys are trying to do.
Yeah, we're doing quite a lot of work, and we've got some courses coming out for veterans and their families. And then amount is how you can self-help yourself, because I know that's what people want, is those skills to help themselves. But also it's a lot of it is what you're entitled to. It's not you being helped or given money. It's saying, actually, are you claiming your pensions if you've got a war pension? Are you getting the right assessments and assistance, like your credits, as you should be, which then stops you going into debt, which then stops all the and a number of the other problems.
And Kate, I wonder where does that stigma come from initially? Is that a cultural thing in the forces?
The forces are taught how to cope and to manage with what they're doing. They've got a big work through ethics, so actually they're really good employee people to employ, because actually they'll turn up on time, work through, come up with a solution. So when they can't come up with a solution and they haven't got their colleagues around them, which is what they're used to team working, that's when it can sometimes fall down, because they don't want to, and they don't want to put their hands up and say, actually, I need help, because they don't know where to put their hand up to.
And I guess that's the difficulty, isn't it? But how do you go about tackling an entire culture of not accepting help?
I think within the armed forces, they're doing a lot that building resilience within them. And I think a lot of it's in word of mouth. I go to a number of breakfast clubs and link in with drop-ins and associations to actually try and get the message out there that there is the support. And sometimes people need it, but then they can then help others if they need it later on. So that starts that message of actually you can talk about it. And there's one video I show of actually two people actually in the ambulance service, but it's the same as the armed forces. And it says actually just talking about it, speak to your friends, is actually really good and can make a big difference to people.
Mm. So just that in general opening up when you do need help, which actually is probably something as a society in general.
It is something that men particularly have difficulty with, and it's just in trying to encourage people to talk about things because it makes it easier for themselves, and actually unburdening it, actually suddenly there are often solutions.
It sounds like things like breakfast clubs and are exactly the right way to go because they're community-focused ideas, right?
So like this morning I was actually in a wood project and that was really interesting because therefore you're using the natural environment to work with people and support them and have their mental health well-being, which is really important.
Mm. And is there, in general, is there enough funding for these kind of projects? Because they sound like they're very important, but is there an adequate pot of funding there available to get all these projects off the ground all the time?
There's, with all things, there's never enough. Some things there's duplication, so some of it we need to do some streamlining. And some of it is quite difficult because, for example, I'm within the NHS, so my core role is paid for. But when you're innovative and you're going a bit further out of what would be a statutory requirements, then you don't actually fit in within budgets and things that you can bid for. So someone like myself has difficulty sometimes because we don't fit within a charity sector or within the public sector because we're going across and bridging those gaps between organisations.
But it sounds important to have an organisation that is bridging those two things.
And I think that's where it's been really good to see all the charities in our area are working together and realising and starting to put bids in. And that's where I'll have to be also creative and think about how I work with the other partner organisations to make that difference.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the things that really makes people understand the difficulties facing certain people that are facing hardships is examples of what has happened to these people. Are there any specific cases, obviously anonymous, that really kind of underline the issues for you in terms of veterans that need help in the community?
Well, we've had some where we've actually helped them with their assessments, and two good, really good examples of that is someone with mental health who was asked the question, "Can you walk?" What they didn't ask was, when was the last time you were able to walk outside your door without any help? And so if they answered it that way, it's a no. And therefore, they, when we answered it that way for them, they got their assessments and got their the money that they should be owed. And another one like, can you cook a meal? And they said no. They said, yes, sorry. But when was the last time? 3 years ago, because actually I can't mentally go out, buy the food, prepare it and eat it.
Yeah.
So that was related to the topic where we started on, are really good examples, and once we've helped them with that, they've got them. But there's other cases where people have been in difficulties. Either it's been like they've had mental health, we've got them through the treatment, we've got them then back into work, and multiple organisations have come together to work on that. And another good case was we had a homeless person who within 48 hours we got in a bed and breakfast for overnight, we got them into rehab services, the DWP, Department of Work and Pensions, worked with them as they moved area from one area to area to make sure they kept all their payments, and then they got the substance misuse support as well as then the rehab and mental health. And that's where four or five organisations came together to make that difference, and one of our mottos is working together you can make a difference, and that's, I think, what it is no one organisation can do it.
Yeah, and that's two very positive examples. So I want to go back to that first example where you're rephrasing a question to make sure somebody's getting help, especially in terms of understanding mental health. To me, that sounds as if there's quite a lot of hoops to jump through, because it sounds like the wording of these online assessments are not there to catch people out, but they're certainly not there to ease the process.
No, and I think a lot of them are very physically orientated. And actually, with mental health, it's not like that. And you may have one good day, but actually you must be against that, maybe have 10 bad days or something like that, and where you can't do things. And so therefore you can't hold down a job, you can't go out and look after yourself. Your one good day you celebrate and that your life is moving forward, but actually it's quite difficult because they don't understand that always. And I think that some of the understanding is mental health isn't always understood by people, and that can be quite difficult.
That sounds like a misunderstanding on both sides though. So misunderstanding in terms of people who are suffering with poor mental health that need to get help, but also in terms of the system that's in place, it's not fit for purpose in terms of making sure that people with poor mental health are able to get that help.
Yeah, and I think it's, and that's what a lot of work's been done at the moment on, and I think it is improving all the time, but there's still more work to do.
Mm. Is that initiative coming directly from government though? Is that directly coming from the Department of Work and Pensions, and is that work being put in to try and put the issues of mental health more into that assessment system?
I think it's coming from all routes, but it is a slow process because it comes down often to individuals, how much individuals engage with things and what preconceptions they came from. So once again, I think some of it also is cultural and an understanding, and also to an understanding that mental health isn't just one thing. PTSD, for example, it is only a small percentage who have it, but you can have other mental health conditions and multiple things, and often with a bit of physical, which all can make life difficult.
Mm.
But often, and some of them are recoverable, but others are, you manage them, you live with them, like long-term conditions.
Yeah, absolutely. Another part of this report that was put out by the Forces in Mind Trust was had a lot to do with sanctions. And sanctions have come up a lot about universal credit in the press over the last few months or so. And to explain to listeners what the sanctions process is, because it's not always immediately obvious. But the idea is if you fail to meet your responsibilities of your commitment to universal credit, they can sanction you, which means cancelling payments. And there were some fairly shocking examples in the Forces in Mind Trust of individuals who, for example, didn't do the mandated 35 hours job search a week, they did 24 instead. And that could mean that you don't then have access to your universal credit for a few months potentially, and then you're having to go to food banks. That to me sounds like a system that really needs to change. It was something that they advocated for in the report, that the sanctions maybe need to be scrapped for veterans. Is that something you would agree with?
I think there is something that needs to be looked at, is because actually why were they needing credits in the and needing support in the first place, because actually 96% of the people who come out of the armed forces can get jobs because they're really employable. So those 4% that aren't, there's usually a reason behind it, and just going and job searching isn't necessarily the solution. It's actually understanding why and what can be done, and also what support has been given out there for them, because there is charities that actually now DWP and that link into like life work. So there are ways of helping people back into work. And is that happening so they get the right job? Because also it's been aware that sometimes if they've been through situations, being put in a office isn't necessarily appropriate. So it's actually looking and seeing whether there's something in the countryside or in other environments that actually may be more suitable. So I think it's been a bit more sophisticated about how you look at things.
Yeah, it's slightly more holistic as well.
Yeah.
Because, and again, some of that might come down to mental understanding mental health again, because if somebody's been through a certain situation, then sitting in an office all day may not be the right thing for them.
Yeah.
But how do you factor that into a very large system with a lot of bureaucracy and a lot of red tape and that kind of thing?
Yeah. And it may be that you actually come up with different rules and ways that veterans can deal with it, that yes, they need to engage with Life Works, other systems. There's a whole support system out there for veterans, and actually making sure they link in that so that actually the best is made and brought support brought for them. And that maybe will get them back into work.
Yeah. So for people out there that feel like they want to do more and help those veterans that are in need. What can people do?
There's lots of ways. Yes, there's volunteering. That's always a really good route, and they can always contact us, and we can have ways of thinking of that. But some of it is just being aware and asking. When you're doing whatever role you're in, is saying, has any member of your immediate family served? Because that is the only way of actually identifying a veteran or someone. And by doing that, you might think, okay, you have. That might give me a bit of understanding. Where can I get support and link in with people and think about how we do things in our own services, and whether that's a small company with only one or two people in it or larger ones, and they can look at, can they employ people or look at things in a different way, because actually often CVs may not be right because they aren't translated from military to civilian language. And it's just simple things like that that actually could make a difference by just having a conversation with someone instead of, oh no, I'm for.
See, that's interesting. I hadn't even considered to me that every time you apply for a, if you apply for a different industry and different job, your CVs tend to be different. But if you've been in the military all your life, That's a completely different process of writing something, isn't it?
And actually, they've got so many skills, like translating that, a lot of the teamwork and things like they do a lot of project management, they do logistics, which all fit with other industries. And it's sometimes helping someone understand, put that into that language.
And is that the kind of work that the Armed Forces Champions would help in doing?
Yeah. And also there's links into things like LifeWorks, which is Royal British Legion Industry, who give training for that, and anyone can access that as a veteran. So that's where there's so many things that we can signpost people to, depending on what their needs are.
Yeah. And what's going to be next for the network? Because I know that you were a finalist in the Soldiering On Awards. If you want to talk a little bit about that and tell listeners about what that was.
That's a national award with Scotland, everyone involved. There were a group for collaboration and showing how you were working across the system. And we were one of the finalists for that, for the work that we've been doing in Sussex and Kent and Medway. The little team we are. And it was just really good to get some national recognition. We were beaten by a group which were £4 million funding compared with ours.
Well, that's quite a big old bit of funding, isn't it?
But we were really pleased that we were even finalists, because it just recognises what we have been doing. Our next step is that we are going to be doing a course for veterans, their families and carers. And that's going to be a self-management course to help them understand where they can help themselves, whether it is with addictions, mental health, suicide prevention, because we're doing a lot on suicide prevention at the moment, and then where they can access support for themselves or for others, because actually it's then often as mates they will help someone else and say, oh, actually, why don't you go and talk to so-and-so, and that's how often it comes by, that word of mouth.
So much of this seems to be a case of, if everybody can raise that awareness, then we can all collectively do something to.
Yeah, and I think that's the biggest thing with the population, is just to ask the question and then think, oh yeah, there is somewhere you can go.
The KM Community Podcast.
Thank you for listening to the first KM Community Podcast. We'll be here every single week highlighting the important stories and issues from communities around Kent. If you have an important story you think we should be telling, you can contact us using the hashtag KM Community on Facebook, Instagram or Twitter. You can get hold of us in all the usual ways for Kent Online, or you can email me personally at okemp@thekmgroup.co.uk. See you next week.
The KM Community Podcast, bringing you stories from Kent's communities every week.